This show is brought to you by BetUS. With football, college, and pro in full swing and the NBA season revving up, you will need a betting partner you can rely on. And for this week and this week only, signing up with BetUS has its perks. Use the promo code 5, that's the word 5, F-I-V-E, and not only do you get a 125% sign-up bonus upon your first deposit, but if you send us a screenshot of that deposit to the 3 Yards Per Carry or 5 Reasons Sports Twitter account, we will send you a Waddle House or Tua t-shirt free. Again, the promo code is 5. BetUS.com. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman is here. This is another Victory Monday. 4 in a row. I think that qualifies as a winning streak.
Is it coincidence that all 4 of these that were 4-0 since the end of the trade deadline, since that passed and there's no more Deshaun Watson talk?
There might be something about that.
I'm just curious.
If you listen to some of the players, it's absolutely about that, especially Duke Riley. He had some really, really good quotes. And by the way, I'm also going to do something that I've never done on the podcast before, because I think it's kind of like cheating. I'm going to read.
Not have any beer?
Well, no. I don't do that during the podcast. Okay? I've done it very rarely during the podcast, I should say.
Okay. All right.
But I am going to read a Philip Lindsay quote that's just such a money quote. I know that Simon wasn't completely on board with it, but I think Philip Lindsay is, you know, from here to the Ring of Honor is where he's headed.
He had a decent debut.
I was very happy.
I mean,
it was decent at best.
People talking about it like we've signed Earl Campbell. It's pathetic. It's just like, calm.
Well, that's down. A testament Campbell, to what we already had.
Yeah, Walter Payton-ish, maybe, you know?
I mean, this is like when Chris was like, I can't wait for
Dita
to come. Chris messaged me the other day to say, I can't wait for Dita to come back. It was like, this is the level we put.
This is where we are.
We're actually waiting for Michael Dieter to come back. I mean, come off it.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. New RB2 going forward? Maybe. We're going to talk about it on the show. Absolutely. This show is brought to you by Manscaped. As always, the holidays are almost here, and we talked about this on the last episode, but yeah, you know, insert joke here. 5 RSN, 20% off your entire order. Simon, pleasantly surprised. This is a beatdown. I didn't expect this. This is a decent Carolina team. Save for the quarterback. I guess their quarterback just makes them not good. But this is a decent team. Look at the talent outside, and especially on their skill players. Their offensive line has some good players too. Their defense is absolutely loaded. Dolphins absolutely destroyed them. Impressed?
I thought it was the Dolphins' best performance of the season. I don't think their offense is up to much muster, because you can't run it particularly well with Cam Newton, because he's just finished. Mm-hmm. But the Dolphins helped him along that path of being finished.
He didn't look finished in the previous games, right?
No, didn't they mix him in and out with PJ Walker? I mean, the game against Arizona, he came in sort of goal line and stuff, and yeah. Walker played, and then...
Well, he played the whole game against Baltimore, I think. Or yeah. Not Baltimore. Washington. No, Washington, sorry.
Yeah, and he had a really good game. Like 190 and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, he had a decent game in that one.
Alf, your bar is low on good games, mate. I mean.
Yeah.
Well, 190 yards.
That's a decent game.
He had 190 yards passing, and you mix in another 50 rushing with 3 touchdowns. No turnovers. That's pretty good.
three touchdowns. He did have the 50 rushing. It's worth
I think that game was anomalous in terms of his past season and a half. I mean, I think it was pretty clear in New England last year that he was.
I completely agree.
He was broken. But I don't think their offense, and obviously losing McCaffrey to the ankle injury is huge.
Yeah.
But I thought the Dolphins handled the defense really well. And I said in the show last week, I thought, you know, it could be one of those games that Tua gets confused. And actually, he had his best game, probably. You look at the completion percentage and the throws he made. And the line was pretty shocking early on, but actually held up its end of the bargain for much of the game. The run game was okay at times. You know, you throw in some, you know, all of the three backs contributed, whether that was Ahmed, Lindsay or Gaskin. I think they all played well. There were some, you know, I thought the tight ends blocked well. Hunter Long had a couple of really nice blocks. You know, it's nice to actually see him on the field. And Jalen Waddle just continues to play really, really good football. And we've kind of, you know, I think, what did Gesicki have? One or two catches yesterday, and kind of highlights that, you know, there's now a bit
more. 17.
Not very good for my fantasy team.
No, not for mine either. Especially since I have Gronk on the bench. And he's out there getting, what was it, 8 for 123?
Yeah. So, no, I thought it was well coached. I mean, there are issues, obviously. You know, whoever's advising Brian Flores on how to make challenges probably needs to get another job.
that was awful.
You know, the two tackles are really, really bad. I didn't and think the Austin left guard. You what, Chris?
I said I'm the left guard.
Yeah, I didn't
Austin
think
we had a very challenged game.
And the center. Very well. Let's not forget that the center was almost responsible for two turnovers and was responsible for one of them. So the center was not good yesterday.
Yeah, the defense played really well. You know, the front four played well. Ogba's, you know, I think they should be re-signing Ogba pretty rapidly. You don't want to lose him. You know, I know he's not Myles Garrett in terms of sack numbers, but just what he brings is consistent pressures. You know, the seventh game in a row that he's had a pass defense, which I think is the, you know, goes back for like 20 years or something. That's last time that's happened. Jalen Phillips had his breakout game finally. The interior played well. Sealer played well. Wilkins played well. Raquan Davis played well. Secondary was excellent. Javon Holland, you know, looks an absolute stud. So yeah, turnovers, special teams did well. Apart from the mystery of the Jason Sanders post All Pro season is one of life's great. It's like he's lost his kicking boots into the Bermuda Triangle. yes. Yeah, overall it was encouraging, and it's kind of what you wanted to see. I thought it was the most difficult game of this stretch, and actually they dominated it. And now, you know, you've got two absolutely massive games now to get back to 7-7, Giants and Jets at home. You know, and all of a sudden 7-7, like I said last week, and then heading to New Orleans on Monday Night Football, you know, not with a playoff destiny in our hands, but certainly, you know, right in the mix. That's kind of what you want to be. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Chris?
Some offensively, I thought there are some interesting notes, which is one, you know, it just seems like Austin Ryder had probably the worst game, certainly the worst game from a snapping standpoint that I've seen. I'm even going back to USF. I used to watch him all the time. And it just, you know, like I said, like Simon was talking about earlier, I texting him and I'm like, well, I can't wait till Michael Dieter comes back. And how sad is that? And so I think that that's one thing. He had a very challenging day. Philip Lindsay, I thought he had a decent debut for the Dolphins. I think he obviously brings something in terms of mentality, but the thing that I looked for that he brought to the table was his zone cutback ability. There's just a little bit of a different quality to his cutback game than you see in Myles Gaskin or Savon Ahmed and Patrick Laird. And so it gives them probably a few more plays in the playbook that they can try and go after, you know, if they based on who they're playing against. So that's interesting, something to look at going forward. And then the other thing, Jalen Waddle finally got unhooked a little bit. I think it's remarkable that Jalen Waddle is, you know, they've asked him to become Cooper Kupp essentially. Mm-hmm. And he has, like, this is Jalen Waddle, not Cooper Kupp, right? But they asked him to become Cooper Kupp, And that's basically, I mean, if you look at the catch, the number of catches he's getting, the number of times he's getting open, the situations, the routes they're asking him to run, they're asking him to, you know, be that sort of Wes Welker, you know, money guy, and the slot or the possession guy, I guess, the OJ McDuffie. Except he's not those guys. He has the speed of Jalen Waddle, and he showed it on that 57 yarder where he just started running away from people because he got a little bit of space. And I guess Next Gen Stat said he reached a speed that was, you know, top five for the fastest speeds that we've seen, you know, in the NFL this year. So I think that, you know, it's clear, it's a nice reminder that he is still Jalen Waddle. But they've asked him to become this thing, this like an OJ McDuffie like player. And he's done that as a rookie. And I think it's remarkable, because going forward, what happens if they get an offensive line that allows us to hold the ball for longer than 2.3 seconds? You know, like what happens if they get either a run game or other offensive weaponry that complement him better? And give him a little bit more space. This kid, based on what he's doing this year, and I don't say this lightly, he could have all pro years ahead of him. Because if he's this guy in the slot, this possession guy, totally money, reliable, can get, you know, 120 catches in a season or whatever, you know, that kind of guy. If he's that kind of guy, but also he's got Jalen Waddle's speed and playmaking ability, he's got, you know, glorious years in front of him. The effort, sometimes, you know, I nitpick at it. I think that he kind of makes decisions about, you know, when he's going to be caught and when he's, you know, when the play is over, essentially, and he'll go out of bounds or go to ground or, you know, whatever, but he's just trying to stay healthy, I guess. And that's
didn't hurt Marvin Harrison.
Nah, yeah, right. But so I think that that's one, another big takeaway on offense. And then the final takeaways, you know, Tua, he went up against a defense whose strength was limiting the big play. And rather than trying to figure out how to make the big play happen on this defense that is good at limiting the big play and keeping everything in front of them, he killed them by using their strength against them, which is by being more efficient than they could even handle. You know, 87% completion, and just, you know, always just completion after completion, execution after execution, and Carolina just couldn't deal with it. Like, this is a team that limits the big play, and they did that, but Miami kind of turned it upside down on them and said, well, if you're going to limit the big play, then we're going to out execute you consistently. And they did it. And I think it wasn't because they had great pass protection or anything. It was just because many quarterbacks can't get 87% completion versus air in practice. You know, there are guys that can't do that. I mean, and you could say, well, but you know, they're all short passes and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, but I don't care what the average depth is. You know, when did our benchmark become 100% completion? You know, that's just not realistic. You know, it's not that we should not have the expectation that just every throw, unless it's 20 yards down the field, should be completed. That's not realistic in the NFL. I think that he's had his third game now of 80% or better completion. The record is 4, but he's done it in only 6 games.
Yes, you know, which, and that record since 1950, by the way. So
yeah, I mean, so I mean, like, Drew Brees has the record, and it's tied by Kirk Cousins at 4 games of 80% or better completion in a season. And I think it was I forget his name, James something or other, his follower of ours that came up with that on Twitter. Yeah, I mean, and he's done it in only 6 games, and he's got 5 to go. So, you know, I think that it's fair to think that he might break that record, or at least tie it, and tie it on much fewer games. And I think that that's what we're seeing. If you want to talk about anything that we're seeing that's special, and Tua Tagovailoa. And I get this question from some people. Yeah, but do we really see anything transcendent? Do we really see anything special? I'm like, special for an NFL quarterback is about consistency and being able to do it play after play after play and game after game after game. It's damn near impossible to achieve that sort of consistency and always get the job done. And what we're seeing from Tua right now is special accuracy. Absolutely special. You can use that word. It's fine. You don't have to feel guilty about it. Special accuracy from him. And in this game against this defense, that was the ticket. You know, that was the thing they couldn't abide, really. And other games, it won't be the same. Other defenses, it won't be the same. There'll be different defensive strengths and weaknesses. But for this one, it just ended up working beautifully.
Yeah, and one my favorite play of the entire game was, of course, that long pass to Waddle. And it would not have been possible if Lindsey didn't get that block on the edge. And Marcel-Louis Jacques from ESPN, who covers the Dolphins for ESPN, got a money quote from Philip Lindsey. And I've been waiting to hear somebody talk like this on this team. And this is his quote. And I never do this on the show, but I'm gonna do that thing where a lot of other podcasters do, where they read and they kill time. But Philip Lindsey says this when he was asked about that pass block. He says, that doesn't take talent. All that takes is determination and effort and being of the dog mentality to say, I'm not going to let my quarterback get hit. Honestly, that's all that it's about. In my head, how I process things, and I'm a little crazy, but how I process things is I'm protecting this man, his health, and everything about him. If I sit here and I let him go and I let him get hit, his family is watching this and watching me. My family is watching this, and it's a bad thing. On top of that, this is how I keep food on the table for my family, and I really take that seriously. That's truly who I am, and y'all will get to know me a little bit better, but I am crazy. At the end of the day, ain't nothing going to stop me from feeding my family. Simon is... they have like 8,000 running backs on this team right now. I counted them. They have six that are active and inactive. And Malcolm Brown is coming back, I believe, in a week. Is there anything salvageable going forward? Because I know we've talked about Myles Gaskin, but it's looking to me like it's a pretty tough competition for RB2 for next season. Because I kind of like all these guys, but I like none of them to be the lead back. What do you make of this group?
I mean, I don't think anybody expects them to be lead running backs. And I think that's why you've kind of got to take your hat off a little bit to the guys that are there currently, because they're all batting well above their average. They're all doing things that they're not expected to do. You know, the thing, and I know Chris doesn't like him, and I know his vision is limited at times, but the thing about Myles Gaskin is he shows up every week. He's never hurt. He never fumbles. He never turns the ball over. You know, we talk about Philip Lindsey and pass protection. There was a couple of moments on Sunday where Gaskin was one-on-one with Brian Burns and got in. You know, he's not Ricky Waters when it comes to blocking, you know, in terms of pass protection, but he did more than enough time to save a sack and for Tua to make completions. Same with Ahmed. Ahmed's sort of 0 to 60 is quicker than anybody on the team. And so there's the little third down pitch, the little pitch to Ahmed when Tua sort of snapped it and ran down the line and then pitched it out to him, the kind of option pitch. He's got such great speed. So I think you want those guys back next year because they're nice change of paces, and that's ultimately what they are. They're undersized, 5'9", 5'10", 195 pounds. They're third down backs, guys that can come in, catch the ball out the backfield, can pick up yards. You know, I think it's unfortunate they've been placed in this position by an abject series of either free agent signings in Jordan Howard and Malcolm Brown, or just summarily failing to select, you know, J.K. Dobbins or Jonathan Taylor or DeAndre Swift or Najee Harris or whoever you want it to be, really, Javonte Williams. I think they're doing a good job, and I think that you'll see, you know, the best two or three of them kept around next year. Probably, you know, if Lindsey kicks on and plays well towards the end of the season, who's to say that you don't keep Ahmed, Lindsey, and Gaskin? Because you know that they can do a job. They can step up in a pinch if the lead back gets, you know, whether that's a guy they draft, and hopefully it is, because I just don't see relying on a veteran is the, you know, they've been down that route and it hasn't worked. You know, it's a decent draft for running backs. There's a lot of, you know, good quality mid-round. You know, you look what the 49ers do every time. You know, every draft, the 49ers, it's Elijah Mitchell this time around, you know, which makes it even more confusing that Ahmed was let go by them, because you'd be so you wouldn't be shocked that they turned him into a 1,000-yard runner, because Bobby Turner is such a Hall of Fame, assistant coach, or he will be a Hall of Fame assistant coach when he retires, for the work that he obviously did with Mike Shanahan in Denver and now Kyle in San Francisco. So yeah, I think, you know, the best two or three will stick around next season. I don't think you go the vet route, and I think you end up drafting. I mean, they need to, surely. Tua is now showing enough that you know that you can build around him. You don't need to waste your picks on a trade for Deshaun Watson. Now you build around him. Now you bring in receivers that can stay healthy. You bring a power running game, and you bring an offensive line that can come and knock the snot out of people. And that's not what they have. You know, you need to give him time. You need to give him weapons, and he's got some of them. And you need to give him a running game. And, you know, let's see where we go from that point.
Chris, what do you make of this? It's not a running game yet, but they're faking it well enough that it's helping the offense. What do you make of this group and how they're running the football?
I think it's actually, I don't know, there's commitment to the ground game. I think that there's difference between, you know, commitment to the ground game and actually having the ground game. It might be serving its function, just that level of commitment to it might be serving its function as far as, you know, what the defense starts to not necessarily be afraid of, but what they start to aggressively start to, you know, try and hit after. So maybe that's it. But in my perception, the way this keeps going is actually it still seems that the pass is opening up the run. It seems like when they get something going from a passing standpoint, or they start to get a drive going, that's when you start seeing a few successful runs. But overall, the run game, I mean, if we're looking at it, you know, they 68 yards against the Buffalo Bills, you know, 47 yards against the Houston Texans, 60 yards against the Baltimore Ravens. Okay. But then the last two games against the Jets and the Panthers, have been 115 yards and 111 yards. And that's, well, you know, that's, is that enough to say that they're actually getting it going? I don't really think so. I mean, I'm just being honest here. You know, the Panthers aren't exactly, I mean, they're good at limiting big plays, right? But that doesn't mean they're great at stopping the run. I mean, they let like 250 yards rushing up to the Cowboys, and, you know, 200 yards rushing up to the Vikings, almost 200 yards to the Washington football team just last week, on the ground. So, I'm not convinced. I do think Philip Lindsay adds one extra dimension, which is some outside zone. You know, I'm not sure that I would like to run outside zone with a Savon Ahmed, but I'm not sure that he's really great at it. Like, his speed is really good for it, but I'm not sure that his, you know, vision and cutback abilities were really there. The thing that you saw from Lindsay and even just a few plays is a little bit different, I guess, savvy of execution on the zone cutback. So that'll be interesting. I mean, the more tools that you can add into the tool bag, you know, the better. And that could be something that you could see them exploit against a team that might be soft to outside zone. You know, who knows? So, you know, yeah, a little bit extra there in the ground game, but not convinced at all that that this is happening, and not convinced that it's not the pass that's actually opening up the run at times during the game. And I guess we'll just have to see. We got the Giants coming up, and we'll see what they do against them, and then they have the bye week where they might, you know, retool and see, you know, take stock of things and see what their strategies are going to be going forward.
Yeah, I think it's important that they at least continue this facade, that they continue to try to fake it, because I think it just helps the offense. It gives them a look of balance. It makes teams, if not even respect it, but acknowledge it. And I think it just helps Tua. I think it helps with his rhythm. If he's throwing, you know, 46, 50 times a game, you know, I don't think that's particularly helpful. I think a little balance, even though it's kind of a fake running game because it's not very good, I think it just helps them. And, you know, and if you do pop runs and you get them into third and five, I think Tua is one of the better quarterbacks on third and five in the entire league. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I saw them like 3 weeks ago and they were top five. But one unit that is not faking it is that defense. That defense has become overwhelming as of late. And now they're getting to the quarterback with four at times without even blitzing. Your thoughts on that unit, Simon?
Yeah, I said it earlier, I thought they played well. It was a breakout for Jalen Phillips, which he kind of needed. I thought he struggled to get off blocks at times and kind of been hoovering up sort of coverage sacks, essentially. But he was excellent yesterday. I like how versatile they get with him in terms of moving around, whether he's lining up over the guard, whether he's outside, whether he sort of stands up, whether he lines up inside, whether he rushes out to in. And I think that's really effective use of him. I never saw him as the linebacker. They sort of tried to project him to be some guy sort of running around trying to be, you know, something he isn't, you know, just let him do what he does best, which is get after quarterbacks. You know, he's grabbing and ripping and, you know, he's swimming through tackles and he's got that closing acceleration, which is critical. And, you know, he was a Cam Newton wriggling out of a sack for a four sack game. So yeah, I thought he played really well. And the overall unit, you know, you're kind of masking the deficiencies in part because you're playing a lot of defensive backs. And it was nice at the end of the game just to see the, you know, no Byron Jones, no Javon Holland, no Xavier Howard, you know, playing the young guys, which was nice to see. We're so far up that we could get them, you know, the Igbinoganes and the Davises and those guys, get them some reps.
And I like that they kept PJ Walker out of the end zone. That was nice.
Absolutely. But, you know, I think it kind of comes back to, you know, you look at what you're able to do matching up with the guys on the back end in terms of the two corners. But Javon Holland is a superior football player. You know, he is, you know, you look at how he, and actually I thought that Darryl Johnson on the commentary explained it really well in terms of DJ Moore essentially sold to Javon exactly what the play was, because he didn't run him up to right under his grill and then make his cut. He kind of, you know, Javon was able to pass him off and read that the ball was going outside, and he did it perfectly. I just think he's an outstanding player. I thought he was a great player at Oregon, despite having sat out. You know, let's not forget he didn't play last year. And he hasn't played safety for 3 years when you look, because the season before, he was essentially for about 98% of the time playing as a nickel slot corner. So, yeah, I think he's, that's an absolute home run. And what it looks like is those first three picks look like they're going to be absolute home run picks, which is kind of, you know, is it a job saver for Chris Greer? I mean, who thought we'd be saying, you know, we talk about Michael Dieter and hoping he'd come back. Now we're talking about, is this a job saver for Chris Greer? Because he's hit three home runs. I'm not sure it is, but I tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me that they do. If they did move Greer, I think that these three picks have essentially underlined that they will probably promote from within. I don't think they'll bring somebody out, because it's just not Steve Ross's, it's just not his, you know, raison d'etre. It's just not what he does anyway. And unless the Dolphins collapse from here on out, I think either Greer will survive, or, you know, they might move him to another position like they did with Tannenbaum, where he went from GM to some other weird newfangled name that they gave him and promote from within, because I think these three kids will end up saving his job. And obviously two are playing well as well. You know, it feels like they've kind of whiffed on Noah, whiffed on Austin Jackson, but two are obviously saving that 2020 class. And you can't argue for it with three studs that they've taken out of 2021. So we shall see. But yeah, it's the unit's playing really well. They're getting lined up properly. They're schematically, I think they're excellent. You know, there was the one kind of what felt, and Chris explained it really well on the OnlyFins, if you missed it, on the OnlyFins chat that we do, in terms of passing over, and there seemed to be some miscommunication between Howard and Jones. But you know, you take one mistake and you limit Cam Newton, you know, who's not that far off being league MVP, to, was it five completions out of 19 attempts for 92 yards?
Five for 21.
There you go. So tells the tale, really. So, and that, you know, he never got a minute. Rolled over him, lots of hits, lots of pressures. You know, balls knocked down. That wasn't just Ogba. Phillips got his hand up and knocked it down. Christian Wilkins did. Raekwon Davis. But Davis had a good game inside as well. So, yeah, it's an ascending unit, absolutely.
Yeah, and one thing that I noticed – Jalen Phillips, they took him out of that wide rush role on third down. And I think it was due to performance, because he tends to rush as a right end. how you would rush in a 4-3 flex, where which is what University of Miami plays. So you got, you kind of run a little bit, you kind of, you're rushing upfield a little tighter than what they want. Dolphins want you to get a little wider and then crash. So you want to create some space for your tackles to run your stunts with the A-gap blitzes that you run as well. So the guy that they put in that position was absolutely unblockable all day. And we haven't mentioned his name yet on this podcast, but welcome back, Andrew Van Ginkel. He was unblockable yesterday. I don't know if you watched him, but he was all over the place. Like, he was flushing quarterbacks. He was getting in the passing lane. He, at one time, he actually stopped his rush, dropped back, got in front of where McCaffrey was trying to flare out for an arrow route, and Cam just stared at him like, okay, I can't throw it there. This guy's is standing right in front of McCaffrey, and he's going to pick it off. I thought Van Ginkel was absolutely great. Chris, your assessment of the defensive performance, and particularly Andrew Van Ginkel, he's back and back playing a familiar role.
It was very good to see him back, because I think we talked about it, like, between the guys that we talked about, Jalen Phillips and Emmanuel Ogba, who I think has been, understated or under, he's not getting enough airplay as far as recognition for this year, for the year he's having. He really needs to be back. Emmanuel Ogba is having he has been a phenomenal player for us since they got him, and he needs to be back. And he is, you build around him. He is a guy you can build your defensive end, your pass rush unit around, I think. And I don't say that, I try not to say that lightly. I think between him and the flashes that Jalen Phillips shows, and I do think it's flashes, I don't think it's consistent yet. I think if you look at it, he had, really good games from a pass rush standpoint against the Colts, the Texans, and here in this game, obviously, against the Carolina Panthers. I think if you look at all three of those teams, they're tackle challenged too. So that's one thing. But he was 23% pass rush efficiency or pressure efficiency against those three teams, and then 6% for the other. For the other nine games, there's an unevenness, as a rookie, which you expect as a rookie. And I think he's starting to get a little bit better late, in these last couple of games. It's, not trying to set any kind of narratives or anything like that. It's just, this is what it's been. This is what it's looked like. So I think that he's got a very promising future though. And hopefully the future is now for the rest of the season. And he, has more of these games like this. So I think between those two defensive ends, you've got it. And then you've got Christian Wilkins and Zach Sealer and Raekwon Davis. And let's, Vince Butler in there too. Or Adam Butler, not Vince. What am I talking about?
Duke Riley did what I say as well.
Yeah. And Duke Riley is, he's a linebacker. He's a speed linebacker that they've added to the mix. But I mean, I think that what they needed is an extra, sort of a fifth rush kind of guy. And Andrew Van Ginkel stepped up to the plate in this game. And I'd like to see that happen a bit more often than just one game. And we haven't called him out all year. That's something to think about and keep an eye on. But we really have a great defensive line situation, defensive front situation opening up here, and I think it's helping the secondary. I think in addition, they have the good now the play Simon mentioned. I just thought, the big completion. I thought that it looked to me like Byron Jones was supposed to stay as deep as the deepest man, sort of a Nick Saban coverage, and that he got a little bit too aggressive with his man, off the snap, and then left him not in position to guard the deepest man who was going vertical, and that might be why Xavier Howard looked so flat-footed, is because he thought he was getting passed off. And then he didn't get passed off. And so I think that luckily that just ended up being one play, that was it. I thought this might be, oh no, what if this is a really good way to beat the zero look that Miami keeps doing? Well, it didn't end up being that. So that's good. So going forward, I don't see them like, you know, suddenly being afraid of the zero coverages. I just like that the defense is playing like they should have this whole year, because when you really looked at it, like, this isn't the first time Javon Holland has looked like a stud as a rookie. You know, this isn't the first time that Jalen Phillips has shown promise as a rookie. This isn't the first time, the first game that Emmanuel Ogbah has looked so good, that Christian Wilkins has looked so good, that Zach Sealer has been making plays, that, you know, Adam Butler has been doing a pretty good job. Jerome Baker, we know what talent he has. Xavier Howard has been having an Xavier Howard year, really. And Byron Jones is very talented as well. And even before Javon Holland got out there, you know, we were talking about how McCourty was actually doing pretty well at free safety, looking pretty good. Eric Rowe is Eric Rowe. All these guys, this defense was built to play this way, and they weren't. And it's still a mystery. You know, it's still a mystery as to why that was not happening in the first half of the year. But it's good that they're actually making good on the talent that they're fielding out there, because they do have a very talented defense. This should not have been getting abused by the Atlanta Falcons the way they were, you know, like teams like that. That's not the way they were built. So it's hopefully they'll see it going forward. You know, they play the Giants and the Jets, and I don't think those are great offenses. And then the Saints, we'll see, you know, who they're even fielding at quarterback at that point. But I mean, if it's Trevor Siemian, I'm not exactly, I wouldn't exactly be thrilled about that if I were the Saints fans. And you know, it's lucky they have sort of a decent schedule lined up ahead of them. Even going back to the Tennessee Titans, I mean, they ran for like a whole lot of yards against New England, the Tennessee Titans with, and everybody's going to be like, you know, oh, you know, Ryan Tannehill ain't shit without Derrick Henry. Well, no, it wasn't that, because they ran for a buttload of yards. It's more like without AJ Brown, Ryan Tannehill ain't shit.
They ran for 270 yards against the Patriots. I
mean, just phenomenal day on the ground, but it didn't matter.
Yeah. And, you know what the difference was, right? Tannehill throwing interceptions in the end zone and fumbling after 60 yard runs.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, but it's a testament to that offense on Tennessee is coming unglued. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it's necessarily because of Derrick Henry, but it, you know, it's something. And so the defensive stretch that you're looking at is the Giants, the Jets, the Saints, the Titans is the next four games. All four of those offenses are floundering. And yet our defense is playing their best ball, you know? And so I think that, I think you look at that and that's a really good, and then it makes for possibly a real showdown, a week 18 showdown, 17th game of the year against the New England Patriots at home. You know, what's going to happen there? What, you know, cause obviously they have ramped up their game and they're doing well offensively. And that'll be for all the marbles at that point, for the final game of the year. And that's, well, it feel good to not be irrelevant in week 18, if that's the case.
Yeah.
I've got, two bits of breaking sports news. Number one, Rhett Lashley is now the head coach of SMU. So He's left the University of Miami, which the domino for Manny Diaz falls. But the second piece of news is draft related. Spencer Rattler has entered the transfer portal. So that means he's not coming out. I mean, why would he? Because his year's been terrible.
No, he can't. Yeah.
Very interesting.
All right. That's it.
He could not come out. Right?
No way.
No way. I'd
get drafted over him.
No, he's been terrible. All right. That's it. There is no more. The next time we talk to you, we will be talking about five in a row and the New York Giants. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.